Hello and welcome to QSO. It's all about ham radio. Brought to you by Trans World Antennas, Heil Sound, Gigaparts, PMC Science, Tux-Support.com, Markham Street Films, and Martin Lynch & Sons, your European distributors for the finest in amateur radio equipment. This week on QSO, our guest is Jim Eller, K8ELR. Jim is with the Aero Communications Association in Washtenaw County, Michigan. We'll be right back with our guest Jim Eller, K8ELR, with the Aero Communications Association in Washtenaw County, Michigan, right after this. If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping, and makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com. Since the beginning of time and across the history of radio broadcasting, there's only one radio station that has ever earned a full-length documentary dedicated totally and completely to its rise to a pinnacle never before achieved by any radio station and its fall. This is a story of what happened when the most legendary programming genius of all time takes the reins of an obscure Canadian radio station in the small city of Windsor, Canada, and creates a radio legend that rocked the Motor City, the USA, and half a continent.
That does it for Big Tom Rivers, 1971, and Hank O'Neill starts a brand new year next at CKLW. For the last time this year, I will say to you, rock on, mother! Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
CKLW.
2020 news guys, they were disc jockeys without music. Bum, bum, bum. And everybody knew that something was going to happen. You knew something was going to happen.
Motor City Mayor Roman Gribbs has a mad on for an unidentified rapist, a butcher knife-wielding pervert cornered a secretary in the elevator at Detroit City County Building and rode her to a vacant seventh floor and proceeded to sexually assault her. Guards are now being considered for future surveillance of the crime-stained seventh floor. Lee Marshall, 2020 News.
Now, Markham Street Productions takes you there as you relive the rise and fall of
the big HCKLW, the Motor City.
You can now own your own copy of this new DVD documentary, Radio Revolution, the rise and fall of the Big 8 from Markham Street Productions. The special edition DVD of this award-winning feature-length documentary includes extra scenes, outtakes, photos, and special features. Radio Revolution, the rise and fall of the Big 8, is now available for only $29.95 plus shipping.
go to RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com. Order now, while supply lasts. RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com.
And the hits just keep on coming.
CKLW, the Motor City.
The word emergency, it means something unexpected has gone terribly wrong. Normal ways of doing things are not working. The fastest way to turn an emergency into a full disaster is to lose communications. Ham radio people understand emergencies. For over 70 years, they have provided free emergency communications for organizations. Ham radio, when normal ways of communications fail or get overloaded. The amateur radio emergency service. We'll be there.
This week on QSO, our guest is Jim Eller, K8ELR. Jim is with the Aero Communications Association in Washtenaw County, Michigan. Our guest is Jim Eller, K8ELR. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Ted. It's nice to be here with you this evening.
So you're talking to me from the state of Michigan, and currently where are you located in Michigan?
I live in Ypsilanti. It's hard to say, but it's Ypsilanti. It's about from the center of Ann Arbor, which is where our club is based. I'm about 10 miles away.
And of course, what is it? when I was living in Michigan, they used to call Ypsilanti. They called it Ipsy Tucky or something like that. Do you remember?
Yeah, we still read that. Yeah.
I don't know if you had ever heard that before. And I assume that's probably because there was a lot of folks from Kentucky that that relocated in Ypsilanti at some point in time, and that's probably where that came from. Now, where is your club located?
Our club is covers the whole county. That's what we call our club area, the Washtenaw County, Washtenaw. And but we hold our meetings are held at the Ann Arbor chapter of the Red Cross. Well, it's Washtenaw County chapter of the Red Cross. In fact, we had a meeting last night.
And about how many folks are involved in your club?
I think actual registered paying members, I think we have around 100. So it's pretty big, and we have a very diverse population of hams that are interested in many facets of the hobby.
Now, you know, if you have 100 members, about how many folks attend the meetings? How many people show up for club meetings?
I think last night, I didn't count them, but I'm pretty sure it was around 35, maybe 40.
I was going to say, because generally speaking, you'll have more members than you will have attendees because of scheduling, and different people have different commitments and things, so you can't get the whole group together hardly at one time unless it's a singular outing once a year that everybody can really plan on. Well, tell me a little bit about this group. Now, the name of the group is what? What is the name of your group?
Well, it's Aero. We're at W8PGW.org. If somebody would like to look us up, it's Whiskey 8 Papa Gulf Whiskey. Aero used to stand for, it was the Amateur Radio and Repeater of Washtenaw County. We don't use that. It's not an acronym anymore. We just registered that name, and our the club name is Aero Communication Association. That's all we are right now. But it used to be, this club has been in existence since the 70s in one form of another or another, and so we just call it Aero. It's really cool because we call our friends and buddies, we call them Arrowheads or Arrowites. You know, I mean, it's fun to just say that.
So the folks that are the members of your club, now, are they from, I mean, are you taking in areas, say, for example, like Livonia and Plymouth and all of those outlying areas, or is it just simply Ypsilanti and Ann Arbor? Basically those two towns, or how does the membership fall as far as over the widespread Detroit area?
Well, I don't know of any members that live as far toward Detroit as Livonia. I know all those areas have their own clubs. We're mostly Washtenaw County. We cover the whole county. We have people that live 25 miles from Ann Arbor that come to our club meetings. It encompasses Ypsilanti, Chelsea, Dexter. We do have members that come as far from far away as Brighton, Michigan, which is probably 40 miles from here.
Now, is Brighton inside of, is that inside of Washtenaw County?
Brighton is in Livingston County. And there is, as far as I know, there's a couple clubs in Livingston County. But we have members that come from the Brighton area to come to our meetings occasionally, and our members.
I was just wondering because, now I'm trying to think, Saline, Michigan, is that in Washtenaw County?
Yes, that is about 5 or 6 miles south of Ann Arbor. And from where I live here in Ypsilanti, it's probably 10 miles to downtown Saline, which is a beautiful small city, small town, just south of Ann Arbor. In fact, our secretary, I believe, lives in Saline.
The reason I ask, I remember years ago, there was a station, radio station there, and I think the call letters were WOIA or something like that, and then later it changed to WNRS. They called it the Winners, and a fellow worked there by the name of Jim Kerr, and Jim later emerged in New York City as the morning man at WPLJ, you know, so he made the big time. Actually, Jim went to work for WLS in Chicago, but he worked for WHMI in Howell, and he also worked for Winners in Saline, and I don't know where else he worked. I mean, he and I kind of played dodge-em stations, you know. we worked around all these little stations on the west side of Detroit and whatnot, and had a lot of fun doing it. I was just curious. Yeah, I don't know how far you go back, but do you remember the little blue bus that WSDS used to have? They'd park it in front of all these places and do these remote broadcasts.
You know, I don't remember that part of it, but I do remember hearing that station. I know I listened to it. I used to live on the northwest side of Detroit, and Ann Arbor was one of our destinations whenever we'd go out and run around as a teenager.
Uh-huh.
We would come into Ann Arbor in the 60s, of course. And Saline, I don't think there's any radio station based in Saline anymore, but as far as Howell, WHMI, that radio station is still in existence, and it's right downtown Howell. And I used to listen to that station quite a bit when I lived in Howell. I lived in Howell for a few years before I moved toward Washtenaw County and got so I was kind of tied in with Ann Arbor. But that station still exists, WHMI.
WHMI in Howell, yeah. It's, the Detroit area has a pretty rich broadcast radio history, you know. So if you lived on the northwest, you say northwest side of Detroit, you were Redford in that area.
That's right. I went to Redford High School, and I lived, if you look to the map, it'd be Telegraph Road and Grand River in that area there somewhere.
I think
7 Mile and Telegraph is where I lived.
Yeah,
you know, being from Detroit in the 60s, of course, I took my car and cruised up and down Telegraph, and if it was raining on the west side, we'd head for Woodward, which I'm sure you know where those places are. And we used to cruise up and down Woodward all Saturday evening and our car all polished up and things like that. So, yeah, I'm from that west side of Detroit, and I do remember the radio stations that I listened to in the 60s and 70s. I remember when FM first came on the air. I remember when FM used to be literally free radio where there was no commercials. And I listened to all those radio stations that you're familiar with in Detroit. I also listened to CKLW in Windsor, Ontario. And, you know, as a teenager, that's all we did pretty much. I mean, I used to listen to baseball games with the little transistor radio stuck under my pillow, and I'd wake up in the morning and it would be gone. I'd ask my mother where it was, and she said, well, the game was over, and you were asleep, and I just took the radio and turned it off. So I did all those things. I remember when the World Series used to be during the day, and we'd sneak a radio, you know, a little transistor radio in your shirt pocket or something, try to run an earphone in there and try to listen to the game during the day in school. You know, that was before iPods, so you know, the radios were not too small, but it anyway.
We'll be right back with our guest Jim Eller, K8ELR, with the Aero Communications Association in Washtenaw County, Michigan, right after this. Week after week, you hear us talk about Trans World Antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews. Or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. See what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna. Thank you. I found this vitamin put out by the Premier Micronutrient Corporation. And it's a different vitamin than I'd ever taken before. Matter of fact, it'll be a different vitamin than you've ever seen. Metabolic has all kinds of things going for it. Number one, first off, it was designed correctly. Not like vitamins you buy in the supermarket or off the shelf. It's known that water-soluble micronutrients have a half-life of 4 to 6 hours, and fat-soluble constituents have a half-life of 6 to 8 hours. So it only makes sense to maintain a steady state of proper antioxidants in your body, the supplements have to be taken twice a day. There's no other way. You want to take a vitamin that actually makes you feel different? You need Metabolic. Now Metabolic and another formula they make called Veterans Formula, they don't contain iron, copper, or manganese. Now, these minerals are known to interact with vitamin C, and they produce excessive free radicals if they're in your vitamin supplement. And this production of free radicals caused by this combination is in more than 95% of the commercial vitamins that you'll find on the supermarket shelf. It's exactly the opposite of what you want. In addition, these minerals, especially iron, can be dangerous, because men of all ages and women after menopause don't excrete iron in any significant amount. And that excess of iron in your system causes more free radicals. Diabetes and high blood pressure, that's the formula for you. There's also the Veterans Formula. What you need to do is go to the website and take a look. It's pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us. Very simple to remember. Believe me, you take Metabolic or Veterans Formula for 2 weeks, and you will be a different person. Take a look on the website. Go visit the website at pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us. As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email, because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? Then what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. This week on QSO, our guest is Jim Eller, K8ELR. Jim is with the Aero Communications Association in Washtenaw County, Michigan.
So I come from that time frame, and like I said, I grew up in Detroit and listened to all those radio stations like WXYZ. My favorite there was Lee Allen. And then there was a guy, the overnight guy was Don Z, I believe. That'd be in the 60s. Allen was a big name in Detroit here.
Lee Allen on the horn.
Yes. Yeah. There was Don Z, I forget what his, he came on like at midnight or something. But Lee Allen was one of my favorites. I actually met the guy a couple times. I'd go out to where he'd be doing a remote broadcast, and I'd, you know, shake his hand and get his autograph, you know, as a kid. And I always thought he was a nice guy. And, of course, I knew I heard, and in fact, he's still on the air here in Detroit, is Dick Purton. He was at CKLW for a while. He was in WKNR, which was over in Dearborn, which is another suburb of Detroit. And so that was my, well, there was a guy named Tom Shannon. I think he left Detroit and went to Chicago or something. And then, of course, there was Robin Seymour at CKLW, which you mentioned that you remembered him. And he used to have that TV show. It was a dance show. It was like a Detroit or Windsor takeoff on American Bandstand type thing where the kids would dance to the music and he'd introduce it to the Detroit listeners and people that tune in, things like that.
Well, you know, Robin Seymour started, well, actually, he started on WKMH was the name of the call sign.
You know what? Yes. You know what? They used to broadcast the Tiger games before they moved them off of there.
Before WJR. You know, they used to be on that station.
WKMH, yeah, I used to take that. Yeah, that's a good trivia question you can ask around this area. If you find somebody that thinks they know radio, you just ask them about, well, what station were they on before they went to WJR?
And then what they did is they flipped WKMH, then became Keener. WKNR Keener 13, and they went rock and roll. Of course, they were there before CKLW was, and they were rock and roll. WJBK was rock and roll, and so was WXYZ.
Sure.
All three of those were doing that. And I was going to say, when you were talking about freeform radio, you were talking about when FM was like, I forget what the terminology you was about it not being. I can't think now. Almost no format at all. You know,
right?
Like,
yeah.
Before I was doing any significant work, I went down to WABX. Do you remember 99.5? You know,
sure. Those disc jockeys. The one guy went to Chicago and had the big anti-disco night at Chicago Stadium, where the White Sox were playing the Tigers. And he was going to blow up all these disco records out on the outfield. So they were going to blow these disco records all over. Anyway, they made such a mess that they called the game off. Now, I don't remember what year. I'm trying to think of that disc jockey. But anyway, they actually had to postpone the rest of the game. They made such a mess with the records.
Guy's name. I was going to tell you, there was a fellow that ran that radio station. His name was John Detz. And I had talked to him on the phone, and he encouraged me to come down and apply for a job there. So I went to WABX. It was on the 33rd floor of the David Stott Building. I will never forget this as long as I live. And
I listened to it. I remember what they played, I can tell you, because it was like the first major FM station in this area.
Well, anyhow, the first underground station. So I go to WABX, and I walk in. And I go into the main control room, and it just blows my mind. The windows went all the way to the floor. I mean, I'd never seen anything like this. So they had the window open, and I looked, and I thought, you could just step out there. I mean, you could just take one step too far. You'd be gone, you know. And everybody at that radio station, let me just say this. The aroma in the air... indicated there was something burning, okay?
in the 60s and 70s, I used to go into a store and you smell it in the back room where the guys in the back room were smoking, right there.
Well, it scared me. I mean, I was a kid and I had, I was never exposed to any of this kind of thing or this kind of culture. And some of those fellas were really stoned and it just frightened me. And, I wanted to work so bad. And yet, and I don't know if John Detz would have eventually hired me or not, but I left the building. I said, oh, man, this is not for me. I can't do this, But I think about it now, and it's kind of funny. I mean, it really is hysterical. But it was like culture shock. I mean, I walked in there, and I was like, oh, my gosh, there's no way I could ever work in this place. Anyhow.
They had that reputation of being that underground 60s type station, and I believe it.
Yeah, well, it was like I was talking to Don Keith, and he said it was one of those radio stations where people pretended, they would go on the air and pretend like they were smoking dope on the air. They would pretend that, they wanted that effect, And except I think it was more than just an effect at WABX, and it was more than I cared to to negotiate, and I probably was all of maybe 16 or 17 years old, just scared the fire out of me. I thought, man, these people are really like this, you know. And yeah. I left. I couldn't take it. Anyhow, let's get back to the club. You know, the Detroit radio.
And that'd be a whole other evening we could do.
Yeah, Detroit radio and Detroit television, even some of the personalities and things that came out of there. It's a priceless situation there. I mean, I just not to go down the road too far, but I remember as a kid watching The Ghoul on television Bill Kennedy's Showtime and Poop Deck Paul, Captain Jolly, all those guys. There was a lot of Soupy Sales, I think, got his start in Detroit at WXYZ. I think that's where he started, you know.
Absolutely. I used to beg my mother to be able to come home from school to watch Soupy at lunchtime.
Uh-huh. Oh, God.
White Fang and Black Tooth.
Oh, yeah. What a...
You know, the dogs.
And it was Willie the Worm that read the letters or something.
Yeah, it was something like that, yeah.
Okay, now that we've really detoured, went way down the road where we should be, tell me now about all the activities that Arrow is involved. Folks, this is QSO. It's a ham radio show. I'm sorry. Jim and I we just have this common Detroit background, and when you get these people together like this, it's terrible. You got to put a noose around us or something. Tell me a little bit about Arrow and what all you're involved with and how you folks interface the community and the activities and things that you're into.
Well, first of all, we have a repeater here. In fact, we're looking to improve the repeater, find a new site for it. We have, it's 146.960, and then we have a 220 and a 440 repeater that are not currently on the air, but we're going to put them where our new home is probably. Anyway, of course, you know, that most of the people on our club, they think that that's very valuable, and I do too in a way. But then we reach out to the public and to possible interested people that would be future hams, you know. What we do, we have several events that we have during the year. One thing we do is we have the club members set up, and we have the Boy Scout Merit Badge Day. And what that entails is the whole council in this area that covers this whole county and some that are outside our county, they come to the campgrounds where they have a building, and we set up there several stations there, and we teach different things during the day, and the kids rotate between the tables, and by the end of the day, we have several hundred Boy Scouts that have gotten their ham radio license, their merit badge, and are interested enough that maybe they'll look at it in the future and to get their radio license. Technician.
We'll be right back with our guest Jim Eller, K8ELR, with the Arrow Communications Association in Washtenaw County, Michigan, right after this. It's the 4040. It's a new 40-meter monoband antenna. It looks just like the Adventurer or the TW2010. It's the perfect antenna for high-performance DX communications in a portable package. This antenna system is ideal for camping, emergencies, or permanent installation where you gotta go stealth. 7.0 to 7.3 megahertz without the necessity of either manual band changing or the need for a controller. Just attach the feed line and you're ready to talk. That's the Trans World Adventurer 4040. Go to their website. Take a look. Transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. Have you been looking for a place to put a website? Have you thought about putting your own website up, or possibly you've got your own right now and you're not real happy? The name to think about and remember is tux-support.com. Tux like tuxedo, the little penguin, the mascot for Linux, the Linux operating system. Tux-support.com. Just remember that name. If you're looking for a website for your amateur radio club, your church, your organization, your business, or even a personal site, you need a place to put that site, and you want a simple way to put it together and maintain it, one word or one company to remember, that's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. That's T-U-X-S-U-P-P-O-R-T. .com. Tux-support.com. The only name you need to know when it comes to your website.
Since the beginning of time and across the history of radio broadcasting,
There's only one radio station that has ever earned a full-length documentary dedicated totally and completely to its rise to a pinnacle never before achieved by any radio station and its fall. This is a story of what happened when the most legendary programming genius of all time takes the reins of an obscure Canadian radio station in the small city of Windsor, Canada, and creates a radio legend that rocked the Motor City, the USA, and half a continent.
That does it for Big Tom Rivers, 1971, and Hank O'Neill starts a brand new year next at CKLW. For the last time this year, I will say to you, rock on, mother! Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
CKLW.
2020 news guys, they were disc jockeys without music. Bum, bum, bum. And everybody knew that something was going to happen. You knew something was going to happen.
Motor City Mayor Roman Gribbs has a mad on for an unidentified rapist, a butcher knife-wielding pervert cornered a secretary in the elevator at Detroit City County Building and rode her to a vacant seventh floor and proceeded to sexually assault her. Guards are now being considered for future surveillance of the crime-stained seventh floor. Lee Marshall, 2020 News.
Now, Markham Street Productions takes you there as you relive the rise and fall of
the big HCKLW, the Motor City.
You can now own your own copy of this new DVD documentary, Radio Revolution, the rise and fall of the Big 8 from Markham Street Productions. The special edition DVD of this award-winning feature-length documentary includes extra scenes, outtakes, photos, and special features. Radio Revolution, the rise and fall of the Big 8 is now available for only $29.95 plus shipping. Go to RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com. Order now while supply lasts. RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com.
And the hits just keep on coming.
CKLW. The Motor City.
As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email, because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? Then what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. You're listening to QSO. It's all about ham radio, brought to you by Transworld Antennas, Heil Sound, Gigaparts, PMC Science, Tux-Support.com, Markham Street Films, and Martin Lynch & Sons, your European distributors for the finest in amateur radio equipment. This week on QSO, our guest is Jim Eller, K8ELR. Jim is with the Aero Communications Association in Washtenaw County, Michigan.
We also have what we call AMP Team. It's amateur, mobile, and portable team, we call it. All it is an outing that we have on the last Monday of the month, and we go to a public location usually. We hang a big banner. We got some club members that are interested in QRP, running off batteries. Of course, we have HTs, things like that. And then our net that we have on Monday, our club net, we all check in from the remote location wherever we're at. And while we're there, we try to interact with the public, anybody that walks by. We first of all, I should say, we put up a big banner. a banner big enough that you can see it, and when people see it, they know what's, they have an idea what's going on. So they come over and talk to us, and we have all the ARRL flyers, brochures there. And so we try to recruit. We really do. And basically, those are just fun nights, but we try to put it in a public spot that gets a lot of foot traffic. So we do that. We also have, well, of course, we do field day. And field day in our club, it will get a lot of people. We hold our field day on the grounds of Domino's Farms, which is Domino's Pizza. The founder, Tom Monahan, owns as well its property. And his brother is a ham, and he lives here locally. And so we use that property. But the best part about it is we're on a real high hill there, and we call it Signal Hill. But on the grounds is a petting station, a petting zoo, I should say. And we get quite a bit of foot traffic. People, you know, they're going in and out of that all day. So we reach out there. And, of course, we have the information table at our field day. And we usually have somebody assigned, to talk to the public. So that's a very big thing with our club. And we participate with the University of Michigan Club. They're on the campus. That's W8UM. So when we have our go-to station, we use the W8PGW, and then W8UM will be all our other stations. So we have quite a few members that are members of both clubs. And, of course, one is on the college campus, and they have a great repeater there, too. So we're involved in that, you know, with U of M Club, and we do real well on field day, at least the last few years. Of course, you know, there's some years that you don't have a big turnout and you have bad weather, but one thing about it is our Saturday evenings, we have a big cookout there, and I bet they serve 75 people there. And it's huge. It's big, and it's really a lot of fun. We usually have a 4A or 5A classification that we run in on field day. So we try to reach out to all these people. There's one thing that I want to talk to you about, though. We have the Ann Arbor Hands-On Museum.
Okay, but now before you get into the Hands-On Museum,
okay,
I want you to go back to this AMP team thing and describe that just a little bit more and get into a little bit more detail about that so that everybody understands exactly what it is you're doing, because I don't think all clubs across the country are doing this kind of thing. So, and I know you touched on it, but I'll play devil's advocate here. Okay, how many different locations have you done this at, or where do you? Is it always the same place that you set up?
No, we move around the county. This month, at the end of the month, last Monday of the month, we will be in Manchester, which is in the southernmost, pretty much the southern point of Washtenaw County. So we're going to meet there, and we're going to put that big banner up. We're trying to get the location at the fire station there. Mm-hmm. So we're going to put that big banner up, and we'll set up in a parking lot. And if it's too cold, we'll probably slip in and out of the fire station. So we'll probably use that location. And then after that, we occasionally will locate ourselves on a Monday evening in some of the parks around town. Ann Arbor is great for parks. There's a lot of public areas there, and so we set up, we move it around every month usually. During the cold, real cold weather, we'll use the Red Cross building, and we'll make that our point, and we don't get a lot of traffic there except from the Red Cross, because we don't set up right on the street, but that's the coldest time of the year, and you're not going to get anybody walking by. So what the amateur and mobile and portable is, we just named it that. That's just like an outreach, and we do it once a month on the last Monday of the month. And what we try to do is be visible. If we set up in a park that's got a jogging track or a place where little kids play, you'll get a lot of people there to ask you questions about it. And that has added to our club membership. I know it has. And it's also encouraged people to get radios. their license and then get a radio. And then they get interested, and then they can find, like we all do, we find our niche in the hobby that we really like, and we're hoping that we can get a, you know, we can pick up a few more people. Because I really believe that ham radio needs the influx of new people all the time, which is our club's, pretty much that's our mission. Other than public service, you know, it's to keep that club going and keep people interested in ham radio.
Now, when you set up one of these locations, how many different antennas do you put, or how many bands do you operate when you're kind of showing off amateur radio? How do you do it? Is it just VHF 2 meters, or are you stringing dipoles up between a couple of trees or something, or how do you do that?
Well, we have HTs. Of course, everybody, you know, that has one will bring it out. And there are several repeaters in our area. But we do string up an antenna. We'll string it up between two trees. We'll put up a dipole. And we have one of our members that I know brings the radio out. It's a little portable radio, and he hooks it up and does CW on it. And there have been guys that have brought the six meter portable out there. And they haven't been successful lately, but they bring it out and they show it off. And radios that people assemble, they will actually bring it out. And so we show all that stuff off, show it to the public, try to explain to them what we're doing. And we usually get one portable station, usually running off a battery, something like that. But we stick wires up in the trees and homemade antennas that guys will bring out and try them out, made with maybe PCV, PVC, I should say, support.
I do that too.
Ends, you know? The club is made up by many different members and with different interests. We got guys that love to try out new antenna designs. We got guys that like to build radios. You got guys like me that just hunt DX and break chew with people. So it's an outreach. It's a form of outreach that we try to do every month. And we go out there regardless of the weather. Of course, we won't stand out there in a rainstorm when there's nobody there. But we just do it for fun. You know, I mean, it's just a fun evening. And you always get, different members will show up. So it's a fun thing to do, and it also helps ham radio, I believe.
Well, let me ask you this question. Now, have you all ever done anything set up, and I'm wondering if anybody, there was a group out in Texas that was doing something in the park. I can't forget what they called it now. I don't remember what it was. Something in the park, and they would go set up in one of the public parks in the area, and they would operate there, you know, for the entire day or whatever, and people would come by and see them. But let me ask a question. I've never asked this to anyone, and I don't know whether it's been done. Have you ever set up in a shopping center, like a major mall of some sort? I don't know what's on the west side of Detroit. Now, the last I remembered was the Westland Shopping Center. I'm sure Ann Arbor's got some big mall or a couple, three, four of them. Have you ever set up in a location like that? I'm just curious.
No, but I not since I've been a member and not since I've been the public information officer, because I just started this year as the PIO in our club. That's how I got in touch with you, from things that I've written about that, I guess. But we haven't done anything in a mall, but I see no reason, except for maybe not being able to run an antenna in there, or, you know, feed line. You know, it'd be hard-pressed to do that. But, of course, we haven't done it, but that doesn't mean that it won't come up in the future, because our club is really focused on, you know, demonstrating this for the public and looking for people that might get interested. So it may come up. We haven't done it like that in the shopping mall. And yes, Ann Arbor has one big huge shopping center. That's Briarwood. And that would be a good place, but we just haven't done it. But I know it could be done. It'd be a great place to stick up a banner and put a table with two or three people there and pass out all the brochures you can pass out.
Well, you know, there's all kinds of things you could do. I mean, I was just thinking about this with some of the technology that exists and some of the talent that's available in ham radio. You could almost have a radio, a transceiver outside at the entrance, and you could put an antenna. I mean, it wouldn't be that hard to stick up something, you know. that would not be intrusive and that people wouldn't step on it or fall on it or whatever. But, you know, having the antenna up there visibly would be cool. But it would almost be fun to have it set up in that one in that location and then be able to remote control operate the thing from inside the mall. And they're going to say, well, how do you doing? Well, we're talking on that radio outside. We're on that antenna. You know, because, you know, hams can do anything. I mean, we...
Anything.
Hams can make anything work, you know.
We'll be right back with our guest Jim Eller, K8ELR, with the Aero Communications Association in Washtenaw County, Michigan, right after this. If you already own a TW2010 Adventurer or Backpacker antenna, and you want to use the antenna on 40 meters, you can get the Transworld Adventurer 4040 Array Box in center section only. Right now, only $139.95. That puts you on 40 meters, and you're dealing with the exact same antenna structure that has made the TW2010 Transworld Adventurer so famous. The black powder coating, the stealth, the way the antenna is able to hide. And in addition to that, it's portable if you want to take it with you. Of course, you can get it with a deluxe travel bag. It's just fantastic. Go to the website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. If you can't remember Transworld Antennas, just remember to go to our website at QSO, tedrandall.com, TEDRANDALL.com, and click on the link for Transworld Antennas. Take a look at this brand new Adventurer 4040. As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? Then what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. I found this vitamin put out by the Premier Micronutrient Corporation, and it's a different vitamin than I'd ever taken before. Matter of fact, it'll be a different vitamin than you've ever seen. Metabolic has all kinds of things going for it. Number one, first off, it was designed correctly, not like vitamins you buy in the supermarket or off the shelf. It's known that water-soluble micronutrients have a half-life of 4 to 6 hours, and fat-soluble constituents have a half-life of 6 to 8 hours. So it only makes sense to maintain a steady state of proper antioxidants in your body. The supplements have to be taken twice a day. There's no other way. You want to take a vitamin that actually makes you feel different? You need Metabolic. Now Metabolic and another formula they make called Veterans Formula, they don't contain iron, copper, or manganese. Now, these minerals are known to interact with vitamin C, and they produce excessive free radicals if they're in your vitamin supplement. And this production of free radicals caused by this combination is in more than 95% of the commercial vitamins that you'll find on the supermarket shelf. It's exactly the opposite of what you want. In addition, these minerals, especially iron, can be dangerous because men of all ages and women after menopause don't excrete iron in any significant amount. And that excess of iron in your system causes more free radicals. Diabetes and high blood pressure, that's the formula for you. There's also the Veterans Formula. What you need to do is go to the website and take a look. It's pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us. Very simple to remember. Believe me, you take Metabolic or Veterans Formula for 2 weeks, and you will be a different person. Take a look on the website. Go visit the website at pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us. You're listening to QSO. It's all about ham radio. Brought to you by Transworld Antennas,
Heil Sound, Gigaparts, PMC Science, Tux-Support.com, Markham Street Films, and Martin Lynch & Sons, your European distributors for the finest in amateur radio equipment. This week on QSO, our guest is Jim Eller, K8ELR. Jim is with the Aero Communications Association in Washtenaw County, Michigan.
But a shopping mall, why, you know, you'd have a lot of exposure. People would just be all over, you know, they'd be, you know, coming and going and looking. And, of course, 90% of them wouldn't understand it, but the 10% that did, you know. But I had thought about that before. I mean, I see the antenna as being a challenge. Maybe not as much a challenge. I mean, because I've seen radio broadcasts being done from inside of malls, and I've seen coax ran everywhere possible to get onto some sort of a cable TV outlet so they could either get television or get internet access through the local cable company. I've seen all kinds of crazy stuff like that. So it's possible. You just have to explore it. But I was wondering if you ever did. What is the largest crowd you've ever had? Where were you located at when you experienced the biggest crowd you've ever seen?
Well, it was probably in one of the city parks, and I can't tell you exactly which one would be the biggest crowd. But we tried to set up where we're going to get a lot of foot traffic that evening that we're set up. But, you know, that what you just said about going to a shopping mall could be done. And now, when we go further here, I'll mention about how we're going to run something remotely. But that's a good idea. I'm sure that my club has that. I'm very proud of the club because I'm amazed at some of the things that people do. I know there's enough people in our club that would know how to do this. I mean, we network all our tents and trailers when we have field day. We're networked together. We can see what the 80-meter group is doing. We can see what the stations they worked on, you know, CW and what band it was on. We have them all networked. So I know it's possible, and you know that now that you mentioned it to me, I'll bring it up and we'll find out if we can do it.
it just occurred to me. I was just thinking, you know, that would be so cool to be up in a major shopping mall. And at some point there was somebody, and I don't remember who told me this, and I'll remember half the story and I'll get the other half wrong, okay? Set up maybe at the Mall of America or something, and they were set up to show a bunch of hams wanting to show off solar power or something. Somebody was telling me about that. They were showing how household appliances could be powered off of solar power, but it was a local amateur radio club that was doing it, and they were getting the credit for displaying this technology, you know, which was not, they weren't displaying amateur radio, they were displaying technology, but they were getting the credit as an amateur radio club, so they had their brochures and stuff out there, and I thought that was really cool. I heard about that, and I don't, see, like I said, I remember half the story, and I'm sure I've got half of it wrong. So with that in mind.
Yes, sir, I think I'll bring that up, believe it or not. That sounds like a great idea.
But anyhow, okay, now you have a project which I'm real curious to hear about. Once again, we're talking about this, the Aero Group up in Washtenaw County, Michigan, Ann Arbor area, and it's called the Hands-On Museum. Is that what this thing is?
It's officially called the Ann Arbor Hands-On Museum, and we just, you know, just in conversation, we call it the Hands-On Museum. So we dropped the Ann Arbor. But it's Ann Arbor Hands-On Museum, and our station there, it's a club station. And for about a year and a half, maybe 2 years, we would set up in the lobby of the museum, a couple tables. We'd have all the brochures. We'd put out a display of QSL cards. We had a little code oscillator, and kids could pound out the, you know, they'd send their name, things like that. And we always had several members that I could show people things and talk to them. And we used to get enormous crowds there through that lobby, of course. The museum is attended by, I couldn't tell you, thousands probably every year. But we finally, after we were there for a while, we have a permanent station there now. They gave us a corner of the museum. And we set up a radio in there. Now, we got a grant from the Institute of Electronics and Electrical Engineers, the IEEE. We got a $10,000 grant to put a radio station in there. And to buy, that included a couple experiments that they're putting together for us at the museum. They put us in some cabinets and a table, and, you know, we just have a little setup there. It'd be like in somebody's closet in their house. It's not real big. We bought a real nice radio for it. We bought a Tentec Omni 7. And now that has remote capability, but we haven't done anything with it yet, only because we're fairly new at that spot in the museum. The museum is also, they've been very supportive of us. We also got a grant from the ARRL for $3,000. So with the $3,000, the museum has always wanted this to be very visible. They told us right from the start, we want a big antenna up there, and we want it to be impressive. So we're going to take this $3,000. We're going to put a maybe 50-foot tower, 40-foot tower, on top of the museum with a rotor and all that kind of stuff. We're going to put a beam up there, and we want it very prominent. They want it, and we would like to have it too, of course.
Now, I'm going to interrupt you for just a minute.
Certainly.
If you don't mind, okay? It's time for a commercial, okay? And you're going to help me do this commercial, okay? Is that all right with you?
Sure, that's fine.
Okay. For those of you that are out there that are listening to my voice, and you're a ham radio operator, you're an amateur operator, and you're not a member of the American Radio Relay League, for goodness sakes, get the magazine. Take part in this. You know, I am so impressed when I hear stories like what you're saying, that you're doing this hands-on museum in a place where amateur radio is going to get so much exposure, and you're getting a grant from the American Radio Relay League for $3,000 to do this. What a fantastic thing to think that the ARRL has that kind of a resource that they can reach out to a project like this and have a grant ready so that when you folks, now you can move ahead, you can put a big beam up there on a rotor, and you can really show this thing off. You can make it first class all the way. Hundreds and hundreds, possibly thousands of people will see this, and it will impact them. Some little kid is going to walk by there, and he's going to see this and go, wow, you know, and he's going to get involved in amateur radio, and he'll be the person that is probably behind the electronics that will invent the thing that will do exactly like the transporter does in Star Trek, okay?
You're right.
You know, that's where it'll be, you know? So I just want to encourage those folks, go to the ARRL's website, ARRL.org. If you are an amateur and you've let your membership expire, And you know, I think everybody does that. You know, it's like you forget about it. It's just, you know, like, wait a minute. You know, I haven't renewed my membership now. And then the second shocking thought is, oh, goodness, it's been a couple years. So I want to encourage everyone. Now, there's folks that may have some differences, you know, with the ARRL. Or maybe you've had a bad experience with somebody who's an ARRL member or an appointee or something like that. But you cannot let that get in the way of supporting this organization, because it does so many wonderful things for ham radio. And I don't believe ham radio wouldn't continue. You know, a lot of folks think it would, but you don't know. Let me tell you, you do not know what goes on behind the scenes to defend this hobby and to keep this hobby going. And these folks do a marvelous job. And they're just, you know, I think that it's just a good thing. And I think everybody needs to join the league. And when you said that you got a grant for $3,000, I just think, you know, this is exactly the way it ought to be. And there's few things in life today that you can say that about. You can't say this is the way it really ought to be. I mean, you can look at the economy, you can look at all kinds of things, and you'll say, boy, I wish it was better than this. But when you have an organization like the league and they're able to do a grant like this, it just doesn't get much better than that. So, folks, get on the website, ARRL.org, go to the Join Up page, and for goodness sakes, renew your memberships. If you're not a member, join, and get involved, because it's definitely a good thing. Okay, end of commercial. Continue. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's fine. I support them immensely. I think that's something we need to do. And you're right. Some people have differences, and some people, you know, have something that they don't like about it. But you know what? That organization helps us in many ways that most people don't even know about it. But anyway, this $3,000 grant, we're going to use it for a tower, and that'll put us probably 75 feet in the air, which will be a lot of fun. Because it's a club station, all our members, of course, they have to abide by their license class, unless we have one of our, I go there a lot, and I'll sit there and we guide people, because people don't have the chance to have a station like that everywhere, and especially the young people that are technicians. If you can get them in there running HF, and you teach them what's supposed to be said, you teach them the protocol, you teach them what goes on there, because once you have a technician's license, that doesn't guarantee you that you know what's going on. So it's a lot of fun, and we have a lot of people that show up there. I mean, I've had kids talk to other ham radio operators just old enough to talk. I mean, I've had them 3 years old that were so cute, and they will just say our call letters. And it's so much fun to hear that. And the ham radio operators that we usually talk to with the kids, they go right along with us. They'll ask them what their birth date is. They'll ask them what color. So the kids really get a kick out of it. And you let them all say something, and you get the parent standing back there, and he's going, wow, my kids really like this stuff. I've had little kids look up at our monitor. We have a logbook, on a computer monitor, and I had a kid sitting there. He had made a contact, and he looked over at that, and he says, is that your logbook? And I asked him, yeah, it is. And I said, how old are you? And he said, I'm 6. And his little brother says, I'm 8. And I said, good, we'll sign you right up. And I told the parent, and I said, why not put them in a class? We have a technician class. These kids are old enough, especially the 8-year-old. We have members of our club, members of families, where the kids have their technician license, and they're 8 or 9 years old. And that just helps this perpetuate itself so that we can keep it going.
We'll be right back with our guest Jim Eller, K8ELR, with the Aero Communications Association in Washtenaw County, Michigan, right after this. Week after week, you hear us talk about Transworld antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews. Or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. See what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna. Thank you. Have you been looking for a place to put a website? Have you thought about putting your own website up, or possibly you've got your own right now and you're not real happy? The name to think about and remember is Tux-Support.com. Tux like Tuxedo, the little penguin, the mascot for Linux, the Linux operating system. Tux-Support.com. Just remember that name. If you're looking for a website for your amateur radio club, your church, your organization, your business, or even a personal site, you need a place to put that site, and you want a simple way to put it together and maintain it, one word or one company to remember, that's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. That's T-U-X-S-U-P-P-O-R-T. Tux-support.com, the only name you need to know when it comes to your website. As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email. because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? Then what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. I found this vitamin put out by the Premier Micronutrient Corporation, and it's a different vitamin than I'd ever taken before. Matter of fact, it'll be a different vitamin than you've ever seen. Metabolic has all kinds of things going for it. Number one, first off, it was designed correctly, not like vitamins you buy in the supermarket or off the shelf. It's known that water-soluble micronutrients have a half-life of 4 to 6 hours, and fat-soluble constituents have a half-life of 6 to 8 hours. So it only makes sense to maintain a steady state of proper antioxidants in your body. The supplements have to be taken twice a day. There's no other way. You want to take a vitamin that actually makes you feel different? You need Metabolic. Now Metabolic and another formula they make called Veterans Formula, they don't contain iron, copper, or manganese. Now, these minerals are known to interact with vitamin C, and they produce excessive free radicals if they're in your vitamin supplement. And this production of free radicals caused by this combination is in more than 95% of the commercial vitamins that you'll find on the supermarket shelf. It's exactly the opposite of what you want. In addition, these minerals, especially iron, can be dangerous, because men of all ages and women after menopause don't excrete iron in any significant amount. And that excess of iron in your system causes more free radicals. Diabetes and high blood pressure, that's the formula for you. There's also the Veterans Formula. What you need to do is go to the website and take a look. It's pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us. Very simple to remember. Believe me, you take Metabolic or Veterans Formula for 2 weeks, and you will be a different person. Take a look on the website. Go visit the website at pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us. You're listening to QSO. It's all about ham radio. Brought to you by Transworld Antennas, Heil Sound, Gigaparts, PMC Science, Tux-Support.com, Markham Street Films, and Martin Lynch & Sons, your European distributors for the finest in amateur radio equipment. This week on QSO, our guest is Jim Eller, K8ELR. Jim is with the Aero Communications Association in Washtenaw County, Michigan.
The radio station is really nice. It's not ideal because we still have to compete with all the noisy exhibits around there, because it is a hands-on museum, and you get a lot of kids through there. Sometimes it's even too loud to use the radio at that point, but you can always stand up and talk to people when they go by. You can answer the questions, hand them a brochure. It's really great to be out among the public. And like I always said, there's a difference between having a QSO with another ham and a ham that likes to talk to people as they're walking by. You have to be willing to do it. We don't run that station at the hands-on museum just so you can stick a set of headphones on and make a bunch of contacts. You know, we feel that interacting with the patrons of the museum are people that we want to talk to. If they're wanting to talk to us, we're willing to talk to them. I think the secondary point of having the radio there is then the secondary is where you get to make contacts. And when there's nobody wanting to talk to us, then you can make contacts. I talked in Spain, Romania, Switzerland the other day, which I can't do from my house because I live in a restricted area. We also have the capability of very easily running that radio portable, I mean remotely. So, you know, that'll be something that we do in the future. We're going to work on that. And it would be fun to take that computer out and TCP/IP and run this out and run it remotely. We could be at some remote location. We could have our portable station set up there. We could have our HTs out there. And then we could hook up through that hands-on museum and run that radio. And there you are. You know, it's just another facet of this great hobby that you can find really fun things to do, like trying to run that thing remotely. We haven't yet, but I'm sure this club that I belong to here really has some talented people. I mean, we have professional writers. We got guys that work in electronics. We had a speaker at our club meeting last night. He talked about 900 megahertz repeaters and 900 megahertz radios, converting them, modifying them, because it's all commercial equipment that he modifies. But we have so many great things to do. That running that thing remotely is going to be one of our top priorities here in the next few months. So the hands-on museum, there will be thousands of kids over the course of a year that will see that, come and watch the station, look at us, talk to us, check things out. Like the little kid that just made a contact with a guy in Oklahoma, and then he says, "Is that your logbook?" Well, you know, I bet you that kid remembers that whole thing, not only making that contact, but this kid was 6 years old. He looked up there, and he says, "Is that their call letters? Is that your logbook?" And to me, it just kind of floored me that the kid looked at me and said that. So it's a great opportunity to touch base with other. It's priceless. You couldn't even pay to have that much publicity. And since the Hands-On Museum is very supportive of us, I'm sure this will evolve. We have the capability of setting up about three radios there. And once we put that antenna up there, we can put, you know, we'll put a 2-meter antenna up there. We're going to have a beam probably on 20, 15, 17, whatever. And it'll just be fun to do. Right now we just have two dipoles up there, one for 40, one for 20. Yet on 20, we've made contacts into Europe recently. In fact, I have. And we also have the capability of running PSK 31. We haven't run any of their digital modes on there. Well, CW, but we have the capability, and this club is so big, got so many people that know what they're doing about a myriad of things, that no doubt that we're going to add other things to it. The radio itself, it's a great radio, and we bought that with the first grant. And the antennas now, currently, we're about 30 feet off the ground, and then the mast goes up, you know, 20 feet higher than that. So we don't get the best coverage, but it works, and the kids love it. Saturdays, we have huge crowds around there. Sundays, they come in there. And during the week, I was just there today, they had, you know, field trips. It was 200 kids in there. But unfortunately, it was field trips, and most of them were with their teachers. There were no parents there. So, you know, you don't make the same impact. You don't have a parent saying, "Hey, did you like that?" They might go home and talk about what they saw, but usually the field trips kind of say hello and they walk by. But you get a lot of little kids that'll stare at that radio, and they, you know, then you've got to engage them. You have to be willing to talk to the public like that. And there are some hams that won't do that. We got guys that make antennas probably don't even talk on radio as much. They just fool with the, you know, that end of it. We did in December, December 27th exactly, we made a contact right from the museum just outside of where our station is, within 30 feet of it. We made a contact with a space station, the International Space Station. And we had, you know, about 9 minutes or something while that space station made a pass over the Earth, where we got about 10 questions in. I think that's about all you can do in 10 minutes. And then, of course, then that space station is out of sight. It's over the horizon, and your QSL ends. But that, we got press on that. We got the pictures in the newspaper with stories. The two local papers here did stories on us, took pictures of the kids. It's great. It's great to have publicity like that. And as a public information officer, I would like to increase that, the public presence. One of my friends was a public information officer, and he passed away it's been a year. And he was public information officer. He loved this AMP team. I mean, he loved it all. He'd show up Saturday mornings at the Hands-On Museum, and, you know, he's a great guy. And so I would like to get into it as much as he was. He was younger than me. He was in his 40s and he passed away. And it was very unfortunate. But he's one of the guys that I would say was a good friend of mine, and he's kind of moving us forward in many aspects of that club, along with the hands-on museum. He just inspired me. So, you know, there's all these little aspects of this ham radio that...
We'll be right back with our guest Jim Eller, K8ELR, with the Aero Communications Association in Washtenaw County, Michigan, right after this. Week after week, you hear us talk about Transworld antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews. Or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. See what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna. Thank you.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Transworld Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping, and makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
Since the beginning of time and across the history of radio broadcasting, there's only one radio station that has ever earned a full-length documentary dedicated totally and completely to its rise to a pinnacle never before achieved by any radio station, and its fall. This is a story of what happened when the most legendary programming genius of all time takes the reins of an obscure Canadian radio station in the small city of Windsor, Canada, and creates a radio legend that rocked the Motor City, the USA, and half a continent.
Well, that does it for Big Tom Rivers, 1971, and Hank O'Neill starts a brand new year next at CKLW. For the last time this year, I will say to you, rock on, mother!
Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
CKLW.
2020 news guys, they were disc jockeys without music. Bum, bum, bum. And everybody knew that something was going to happen. You knew something was going to happen.
Motor City Mayor Roman Gribbs has a mad on for an unidentified rapist, a butcher knife-wielding pervert cornered a secretary in the elevator at Detroit City County Building and rode her to the vacant seventh floor and proceeded to sexually assault her. Guards are now being considered for future surveillance of the crime-stained seventh floor. Lee Marshall, 2020 News.
Now, Markham Street Productions takes you there as you relive the rise and fall of
the Big Gate CKLW, the Motor City.
You can now own your own copy of this new DVD documentary, Radio Revolution, the Rise and Fall of the Big Eight from Markham Street Productions. The special edition DVD of this award-winning feature-length documentary includes extra scenes, outtakes, photos, and special features. Radio Revolution, The Rise and Fall of the Big 8, is now available for only $29.95 plus shipping. Go to RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com. Order now, while supply lasts. RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com.
And the hits just keep on coming.
CKLW, the Motor City.
As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening. How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? Then what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. You're listening to QSO. It's all about ham radio, brought to you by Transworld Antennas, Heil Sound, Gigaparts, PMC Science, Tux-Support.com, Markham Street Films, and Martin Lynch & Sons, your European distributors for the finest in amateur radio equipment. This week on QSO, our guest is Jim Eller, K8ELR. Jim is with the Aero Communications Association in Washtenaw County, Michigan.
It can be so enjoyable. So the Hands-On Museum is a project that we put together, and we get a lot of traffic by that station. It's not as elaborate. I looked at one in Phoenix at the Science Center there in Phoenix. It's beautiful. I mean, it's big. It's beautiful. It has its own room. It's all got glass windows and a door you walk in, and it's quiet in there. Well, we don't have the setup like that. Ours is more exposed. It's not ideal, but we'll take it because it sure is fun. Especially, I really get a kick out of working with the kids there. When they come in and they sit down on a chair and you tell them what to say, and then you got a ham on the other end that's willing to talk to them. I mean, the kids just light up. It's just a great experience. I really enjoy that. Probably as much as I do working with the Boy Scouts when they have the Merit Badge Day. So the ham radio at the Hands-On Museum, you can look at the website for the Hands-On Museum. In fact, if you go to our website for w8pgw.org and you click on the menu up there, you can look at the ham radio setup we have and a little bit of information. Or you can go to WA2HOM. It's WA2HOM on QRZ. Look us up there, and you can go to our information there. We're on QRZ, and it tells about the station and how it's going together and what we're trying to do. But you know what? We got the Vanity license for our club station there. We picked WA2, which is W, of course, for our country. And then you have Ann Arbor, which is AA. So we called it A2. And then you got HOM, Hands-On Museum. So that's where that call sign came from.
Well, yeah, I was looking at the webpage here, and it says here, in addition to the station, we'll be working with the museum folks to create several exhibits demonstrating electrical, electronic principles, and wireless technology. Ideas for these exhibits include Morse code, Ohm's law, see your voice on an oscilloscope, and that's really cool, especially for kids. I mean, you know, resonant circuits, oscillators, how radio waves work, Hertz, some sort of experiment evidently, and a crystal radio. And I think that, this is all new territory for kids. This is stuff they've never seen, don't know anything about. And that's really fantastic. So how, you know, is there any, can you glean anything as far as, is there an average age you notice that tends to migrate toward this, or is it all ages?
I would say that the littlest kids that, you know, they can just barely walk, there's people that bring their kids in there and they expose them to all these hands-on exhibits. But I would say probably around 8 years old, you know, you can sit still maybe a few minutes. You can focus on the radio. So I would say the bottom end is probably around 8, might be a little bit lower. And then, of course, it just goes up to however, how old they are. I really believe that you have to have a certain outlook if you're a little older, if you're a teenager in high school or something. But up to middle school, say 10, 12, 14 years old, I think between 8 and 14, you really make an impact on the kids. And the kids that are already over 15, 16, 17 years old, they tend to be focused on, you know, the chat room or the text messaging on their phone. I think they just kind of look at it, and they, unless you can engage them in conversation, if they just glance at it, say, oh, it's a radio, and they leave because it's not interesting to them. So you got to find some way to make contact, and then you might talk to teenagers, and maybe you could get a few. In fact, there's a young man that lives across the street from me. He just took his test, passed the test, and believe it or not, he was at the hands-on museum. He's in high school, and he volunteered there at the museum. And I saw him there, and he was doing some demonstration with another person, doing something totally different. And over, I said, "Now, do you realize what we're doing over here?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "I'm really surprised to see you." Well, he had never seen me there. I said, "Well, step over here." You know, and we checked out this radio, and we talked to his father, and we had a lot of people, and this kid now has his he's just got to finish the paperwork, I guess, and he'll get the license in probably the next few days. And so I reached out there. So I know that it can be done. There are many people there. I know kids that are ham radio that have their license, even general or better, higher, extra, that are in their teens that don't even have parents that are interested at all. And it was strictly up to them to do it. So I know it can be done. I know kids will be interested. It's just you have to find the right person at the right time to hook them. It's kind of like me. It took me 50 years to finally, you know, say, I want to do this. Because I got my ticket in 2000. And so I've only been a ham for, like, this is my ninth year. But I really enjoy this. I see all these opportunities. I see the organization of the ARRL, and I see our club, and I just feel that we need to keep this going because we can step into the future with this, and we can run, you know, wireless and remote and all kinds of things, that one of these kids is going to invent something, just like somebody, you know, figured out how to do digital with the sound card. There's going to be one of these kids in this world that's going to bring us something next. I really feel that it's important that we reach out to the kids. So I would say between 8 and 14, maybe up to 16. And then after that, it's a little hard to hook them if they've never been exposed, I believe. So
let me ask you this question, because this is real important, I think, to any club. I remember when I was a kid going to the Motor City Radio Club at the Henry Ford Museum. And there was a bunch of old guys there, and they were all willing to just, I mean, they were they were willing to do anything to get you to learn the code and get that license. How does Elmering work? How do you folks handle Elmering? Because you've got a lot of activities here, so I would imagine you probably have a lot of young people that need the Elmering.
Absolutely. In fact, we have young people, you know, that would be in their late teens and 20s that show up at the museum, not necessarily to come to the museum. They come in there to see the radio, to talk to us. But we have a club full of people I would consider Elmers, and they're great at it. We have, there's a couple guys that teach the technician license class that we have. We got guys that, we got one guy that's teaching the general class right now. In fact, he is our president. And he's involved in everything. And he's a CW geek, so he likes code. He's always pushing us to learn the code. And he used to write for electronics magazines, trade magazines, electronics and things like that. His name is Dan Romanchik. He's KB6NU. KB6NU, and he has a blog at KB6NU.com. And I would encourage people to look at that blog. He's younger than I am. Yet I look to him as my Elmer. He was the guy that has taken me and showed me all these things that are possible, and he's so knowledgeable about electronics that it's just mind-boggling. He's shown me things that I would never believed. Plus, he's a darn good operator. He's been licensed since he was about 16. In fact, I believe he grew up on the east side of Detroit. So anyway, Dan Romanchik is my Elmer, and I'm proud to say it because he's been an Elmer for probably 75 people over the last 10 years around there. He's encouraged them to get the license. He teaches the classes. He's assembled his own radio, runs KRQPI.
You know what? I just realized something. You're almost as dyslexic as I am.
That's right. You know, I have a hard time. You know, it took me a long time to trade myself to hear people's call signs on the air and be able to make a response that, you know, it took me a long time. I really have a problem with that. So I have to work on it. But you know what? I'm sitting at the radio now, and people look at me and go, what did he say? And if I can hear it well, then I'm usually able to pull those call signs out. So, yeah, I have a problem with that, and I admit it, and it's taken me a long time to train myself.
Well, I have the same problem. I heard a guy on the air last night, and I wanted to write his call sign down, and I wanted to send him an email, okay? And I heard the call sign, and I thought I had it right. And I went to QRZ, and the call I put in there, there is no such call, okay?
I've done it so many times.
So I've reversed a letter somewhere or something. So I have the same thing. A lot of times, this is something we encourage fellas, you know, give your call sign a little slower. Give it a couple times. Go a little slower because there's people like me out there. They rattle it off real quick, you know, and it's like, what'd they say? You know, and they're always, you know, they're in the group. They come up on ID time, and they all rattle them off real fast, you know. A lot of them for ID, you know. Let's say,
well,
what?
You know, listening to some of the overseas stations, the DX stations, you know, I have a problem with that sometimes. And I think that a person has to realize that they have to speak that slowly and use phonetics, use the standard phonetics, because it's hard to hear if you're listening to broccoli, radio, you know, whatever, Superman. You know, it's so hard to figure that stuff out. I personally would like to hear standard phonetics used, you know, most of the time. I mean, if it's something cute and you're in a net and you're talking to somebody and those guys know you, well, you can call yourself radio, Superman, whatever. My old call sign before I got my vanity call sign was KC8PCW. Now, I couldn't even say that. I couldn't say it without stumbling over it. So it's Kilo 8 Echo Lima Romeo is my current call sign.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't even say that old call sign. So you do have to speak slowly. I had a guy in Switzerland the other day. He was making contact after contact. I kept trying to hear what the first part of his call sign was. Now, I had an idea. I could tell sort of what it was, but I wasn't sure. And finally, I heard somebody say it to him. And I finally figured out what it was. And as soon as the band quieted down a bit, and all the big guns were done talking to this DX station, I threw our WA2HOM, Whiskey Alpha 2 Hotel Oscar Mike, I threw that out there, and he heard me. And I put him in the log that day. I had never talked. See, I've only been at this a while, so it's still a big thrill for me to make a contact in Switzerland, which is probably, you know, no big thing to a lot of these, you know, millions of people that are hams that already have done that. But for me, it's a big thrill. I like it. I love to get those cards, QSL cards. So you have to train yourself to hear it, and you know your call sign perfectly, and that can be a fault because you'll tend to say it too fast. So, you know, you can't even hear it. Like this guy was saying, well, I've heard other people You know, they would just run it all together, or the first part you couldn't hear, the prefix. In fact, I listened to the, I can't remember which QSO party, but there was several people, I heard them say, could you repeat your call sign? And they would do it again. And they'd say, no, I need the prefix. And they would say it so fast. And finally, they'd say it slow enough that the guy could hear him. And, of course, he'd put him in the log and went on to the next guy. But this guy was just talking too fast. So, you know your own call sign, so you know how to say it, but then too fast and not clear. So I learned to, I've been, I worked with guys that I consider my Elmers, and they said, Jimmy, you got to slow it down. So it's Kilo 8 Echo Lima Romeo. And usually after somebody hears me say that several times, you know, they can get it because I try to say it slow. Same thing at the Hands-On Museum with our call sign there. You just can't run that together and expect people to hear those six characters that you're saying. So you need to, slow down, use proper phonetics, standard, and you'll do much better. I mean, if that was the one piece of advice, that's what I'd say. You know, if you want to work a station overseas or something or do a lot of noise, you got to make yourself understood. And a lot of people don't understand that. So that'd be my biggest piece of advice for a ham. Just remember, the other guy can't always hear you well.
I was looking at, looking around on the website. Tell me a little bit about how you folks interface the Red Cross, because it looks like that's a big part of what you do.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
We have a club station there. We helped the Red Cross. This is a new building, 2003. They built a beautiful Red Cross building. We put a radio station in, and we helped them equip it and set up the computers and set up the radios. And I know guys that have climbed that tower, guys that have strung coax up the tower there at the Red Cross. And, of course, you know, the reason that ham radio exists, or one of the reasons, is to be of service to humanity, you might say. And we're big on supporting the Red Cross. And you know what? We use their building. They allow us. They love us there. In fact, we have several members of our club that were volunteers at the Red Cross that actually got their licenses and they become hams. So it's a big thing with us. I was just over there for training and orientation today because I just signed up recently to be an official volunteer there. I used to go over there, you know, and help them with things, but I'm going to be a volunteer with the Red Cross. Now, we have packet capability there for emergency communications. We have an HF radio there. And, of course, the 2-meter radio, and I think the Red Cross uses 47 megahertz. With their commercial radios. So we help them develop all that. We have one guy I know for sure has equipped the vans that the Red Cross has with the radios of all types. We have people that trained in disaster. They've had training there, and they're all members of our club. So public service is a big thing with our organization. And Red Cross is a big part of that, of course. And I think it's important that we actually work with them. The guy that handles the communications for the Red Cross right there in the building, he got his license, I believe, last year. So, you know, we've got people sprinkled throughout the Red Cross building that have ham radio, that have their license. And we have many members that participate in functions there at the Red Cross that are volunteers that work in the radio room. They give us our own room. I mean, it's a nice station there. And it's just really nice to have something like that. And our club supports the Red Cross here locally. So, in fact, we had guys that were deployed. Went down to Louisiana. I think it was Mississippi they went to, and they actually helped out down there, and they were deployed from here. So I know it's a big thing with our club, and I'm sure that the Red Cross appreciates, you know, everything we do there. And, of course, we try to recruit everybody that will talk to us. We all want them to, you know, get that technician license, and then you can help out the Red Cross. And we try to get them to upgrade so that they can get on HF and things like that. But the Red Cross, I think, is a good organization. It's a beautiful facility over there. We have radios in there that are function very well. Of course, I think the radios there in the communications room there, I believe those radios were donated. So we're, you know, that's something we would like to upgrade probably in the future. But they work. And so, you know, we have guys that like to run portable, so they run off batteries. So we're ready. No, I shouldn't say ready. We're as ready as we think we can be, I suppose. There's always improvement for your disaster recovery teams and things like that. But we try to help the Red Cross, you know, very, very much with our club. We just try to do whatever they need.
Can you? I was just curious. Can you relate to me? Have you folks engaged in any emergency activity where you were called upon either by means of an emergency or something that's come up and they've engaged your group in terms of communication, helping them out? Have you ever reached that stage as of yet? Or are you still kind of in a drill stage, or where are you all at with that?
You know, I couldn't tell you the details of it. As far as I'm concerned, I'm kind of new at it over there. There are people there that are probably, I can't tell you, but I'm sure that they've been deployed. I don't know, as ham radio operators, I don't know if they have, but we drill. I mean, they have these big nets, you know. They just had one recently that are Red Cross volunteers and our ham radio operators just participated in. I don't know if we've had a disaster where we've been called out locally. I bet we have, because, you know, Michigan really has some stormy weather sometimes in the summer, and you never know what you're going to get in the winter. We've had a record winter here. But as far as communications, I'm not sure if we've been called out for emergencies. Like I say, I'm new at it, so that I don't know much about.
Because I can only imagine that, you know, you drill and you drill and you drill, and then the emergency takes place, and you run into those situations like, well, gee, we never thought of that, you know.
I'm sure that actually comes up. You know, we got some guys that are really into this stuff. But I'll tell you, they're thinking of everything all the time. We got guys over there that are doing all kinds of stuff that is helping the Red Cross be ready. I'm sure there's always room for improvement, but we have people that are working with the Red Cross that are members of our club that are probably thinking of all those what-ifs. You know, there's so much information out in this world now that you can almost plan for anything just by reading about it. You have some idea that, hey, this Red Cross chapter has handled Mississippi or Louisiana. You know, I mean, those things happen. So I'm sure that we're going to be pretty well prepared. And like I say, the club members, we got guys that are computer geeks. We got guys that do CW. We got guys that, you know, they do it all. So I think we're pretty well covered. Like I say, there's always room for improvement. But our people that are involved with the Red Cross, I think they're working on it. And I'm sure that they're training each other and working on improvements for the radio station. And probably disaster response, you know. I'm sure that our club members have tried to train themselves to be ready. And I think we probably are. But, of course, if you have a disaster, who knows? But but we're doing the best we can, I believe.
We'll be right back with our guest Jim Eller, K8ELR, with the Aero Communications Association in Washtenaw County, Michigan, right after this. As a QSO listener, we really need to hear from you. We would like to know you're listening. We'd like to know how you feel about the radio show. We'd like to hear some suggestions. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like to hear less of? And you can do that by going to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. There's a place that says email Ted or some such nonsense as that's on the page. Click on that button and send me an email. Because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you want to hear more of, less of, what you think about the program, where you're listening, How is it coming in on the shortwave? Is it coming in real good where you're at? And what about the time? Is this a good time? Would you prefer it on at a better time? Then what would that better time be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll even send you a QSL card if you'll send us an email. Once again, go to tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And where it says Contact Ted, just click on that little tab and send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to QSO. This week on QSO, our guest is Jim Eller, K8ELR. Jim is with the Aero Communications Association in Washtenaw County, Michigan. Well, it's always that's always the thing you find out at the last minute. You know, you're planning and all of a sudden something happens and it's like, wow. But then there's that, once you get past that learning curve, boy, you know how to handle that the next time around. You know, now you're an expert.
And, absolutely. I'm sure that our club members stuff like that. We have one guy that he's the guy that's installed the radios in the disaster response vans. He's installed their radios. He's put amateur radios in there, and we got one lady that good friend of mine that is involved with the Red Cross. In fact, she was involved with the Red Cross before she got her ticket, and she is our go-between. She is, most of us all know her, and she's been a Red Cross volunteer for a few years. So we always, that it's really good that they know us, because, they can come to us, and the members that are really working with the Red Cross, they can come right to them. We have open communications, and of course, that's the key word is communication. So we try to stay open to everything they ask us about. We try to support them in everything they would like to do with the communications room, our radio room, but I'm always sure that there's some way to improve something.
Well, I just want to say this is very, very commendable of you and your group, because it seems like you're just right on target. You're a bunch of hams that want to spread the word, and you want to get out, and you want to do things, and you want to make it happen, and you are making it happen. And, that is just really encouraging. So I want to say hats off to you guys, and we just got to take notice. Now, I will ask this question. We've got a volunteer organization here, a VE team, and our friend Butch Smith, N4TK, is very much involved in this, and they've been doing these VE testing things for so long, and there's so many people that have been a product of that. I'm just curious, how often do you folks do testing up there? How often do you offer the tests for the various licenses?
We have a VE team. We have two guys, older gentlemen. I can't give you their call sign because I can't remember all of that, but they've been doing it for years. They've if you look them up on ARRL, if you look at Michigan, our two members, and they're probably 70 years old, maybe. I don't want to insult anybody here. But they've been doing it for years. We test first Saturday of every month, unless it would fall on a holiday, which normally it doesn't. We test first Saturday of every month, and they over the years, I bet they processed hundreds. And these gentlemen really have been there a long time, and that's their part of the hobby. They like to teach. They like to help people along. One thing we do at our club, if they pass a test, no matter what, I believe, if they pass the technician class there, that the test, they take our class, pass the test, they get a free one-year membership to our club. And we encourage them to come to club meetings, come back out to the Red Cross, look at that radio station there, come to the hands-on museum and operate there. We try to get them hooked. If you can get a guy that will stay with it a few years and get involved in something, whether it be Red Cross or, our AMP team or whatever, I think you can try to hook him and maybe be successful and keep him there as a member and a ham that wants to improve himself. That's what I look forward to. I actually look forward to studying for my extra. I mean, once it was over, it's like, what the heck am I going to do next week? Well, so, you know, we try to encourage that. So if they pass a test, they pass the technician license test on Saturday, we give them 1 year membership for free. And it's just a way to hook them. And I tell you what, I bet it does. I don't have the statistics on that, but I'll bet you there are, well, I passed my test there. So that's one way you can get people to come into your meetings and at least check you out. You know, I mean, they'll come to the meeting and they'll find something they'd like. And most people in those meetings, prior to the meeting, they're always willing to help, willing to talk to new people. And I have not seen at this club anybody that has the attitude like, I got my license in the 50s, and you guys are just nothing because you just came along last month. You know, like we're not as good as they are. I haven't heard anybody ever say that over there, which is good because, you know, you don't want to feel like it's you versus them or walk into a crowd of people, a bunch of old guys, and have them put you down because you didn't get your license in the 60s and it's not as hard as theirs was. All those kind of things, I don't hear that there. It's like everybody's willing to help. They'll talk to you. They don't, you know, they don't give you a hard time. You don't have this me versus them type attitude there, which is really a great thing for a club. We have members, I don't know how old they are, but I saw one of our members there last night. I don't know how old that lady is, but she's had a ticket for years. And there she was with another lady that has her license, and they attend our meetings once in a while, and it's great to see that. I bet that lady is probably in her late 70s or mid-70s. So it's a great club, and I really enjoy being around those people. I got my license when it was easy to get. I hate to say it, but that's just the way it was, so I had no other choice. You know, not really. So, but I'm proud that I can be a member of a good club and not have, oh, I have the camaraderie that we really do there. We have a lot of controversy, believe it or not, man. We, you know, we have some great discussions. I've attended the board meetings and, you know, what's going on behind the scenes there, our club is really, you know, moving. So it's busy. It's a busy club. But you can find something about it that you like. And, of course, you have all the personalities of people and you got to get past that. But I don't ever hear anybody really bad-mouthing somebody like nothing because he's a no-code extra like me. I had no choice. I mean, that's just what they changed the rules, and that's what happened. So I try to learn as I go now. So the club is really, with the VE testing, and we have a whole team. We must have 15 people that are VEs, and we always have three or four, of course, at the test sessions. And those guys, that's what some of those guys like to do. And so it's just a great club, and the VE testing is every Saturday, first Saturday of the month, and it's regularly scheduled. So we get people from all over. You know, Ann Arbor's not that far from Toledo or the Ohio line, and we get a lot of people that will come to our testing because it'll just be convenient for them. It might be the Saturday that they can get off or something, and they come over there and take the test. So we for testing, we cover a big area. You know, guy will try, it would travel 30, 40, 50 miles. It's only about 40 miles to the Ohio line from where we are. So we get tests, people that come to take tests, probably from, you know, five counties in the northern 10 miles of the Ohio, in Ohio. So we have people come from all over. They will come to our testing session. Plus, when we have our technician class, we have a one-day technician class. And, of course, you can't learn to be a real proficient amateur radio operator by just going to school one day. But you get that license. They encourage study ahead of time. You take the class, and after about a 15, 20-minute break, you start a test session right then. And we have been batting better than 90% of people passing that test after they studied on their own a few days, and come to our technician class, and then immediately take the test. So I think right there we're doing great things. We have 90% pass rate. And, of course, then you got to learn the real part of ham radio, which, you know, which could be anything, whatever appeals to you. So, you know, our testing is important for our club, I'm sure. We make no money off of it. One thing we do, along with these classes, before we had the VE testing, they just recently started, two guys started moving away from our club to have, because they were invited by another club, to have that one-day technician class. They took the class, and I believe they were still at 90% of the people that took the test pass it. So they take that testing on the road, and they're charging $10, which, you know, for a whole day. And then, of course, you have your license cost. But for $24, you can get a class and pass the test. And then the $10 over and above our testing fees, the $10 is going toward the hands-on museum project. So it's a good way for our club to earn some money that way. And we have two guys that teach a great class. Well, Dan is one of them, Dan Romanchik, KB6NU, and Ralph, who I can't remember his call sign right now. They teach this class, and those guys, they do a good job.
Well, listen, so, I want to say thank you so much for joining us here on QSO. Once again, Jim Eller, K8ELR. He's the public information officer. Public information officer. I've turned you from an officer to an operator. For the Aero Communications Association, W8PGW.org, in Ann Arbor, Michigan, or Washtenaw County, whichever way you prefer. I want to thank you so much for coming on board, and let's give out the websites again so folks can come check you guys out.
I'd like to give out the our website addresses so that you could look at all this information that I presented here this evening. The Aero Club is Whiskey8PGW. That's Whiskey8PapaGulfWhiskey.org. And then that's our club call sign and our club site. I'd like to pass along to you KB6NU, Kilo Bravo 6, NovemberUniform.com. That's a great blog written by Dan Romanchik, who is he's a professional writer, and he writes on all ham radio and electronic subjects. And then, of course, the hands-on museum is at, you look us up, it's WhiskeyAlpha2HotelOscarMike.com. Wait a minute. Yeah, .com, I believe. And then we have WC8RC, which is our Red Cross station. You can look us up on QRZ on any of these. And, of course, I'm like you. I support the ALLR. ALLR. See, there's that.
Well, look, I do the same thing. Don't worry about it. I'm so dyslexic. When I wake up in the morning, I always get up on the wrong side of the bed. So anyways, but go ahead.
Well, see, I'm not a professional radio personality like you are, so I'm a little bit nervous here. So it's ALLR.org. So I want to, have everybody look at those. If you'd like to talk to Dan, if you'd like some information, he's a president, and he's the guy that I called my Elmer. He would have a website or email address. It's KB6NU at W8PGW.com. So I believe that, it might be .org. Anyway, look up KB6NU, send him an email. He's a great guy. He's got lots of information, and he's a professional writer. And he knows, as far as I'm concerned, he's my alma when it comes to electronics. So, that's some good websites that I'd like to, have people look at. And if you have any questions about what we do, what we're planning to do, maybe public relations, I know I got lots of ideas. So you could send me an email. It's K8ELR. At ARRL.net.
All right.
So I'd be willing. Yeah, that's fine. I would love to get email. If people have questions about what we're doing, feel free to send me an email.
Well, very good. We really thank you very much, and we'll have to have you back again soon. And this has been enlightening. It's always really cool to hear about an organization or a club promoting ham radio, active in ham radio, and where everyone is just pitching in and doing them. So thank you very much, and we'll have to have you back again very soon.
All right. Thanks. Nice talking to you, Ted.
That's going to do it for this edition of QSO. We want to say thanks to our guest, Jim Eller, K-8-E-L-R, with the Aero Communications Association of Washtenaw County, Michigan. Be sure and tune in next week, same time, same station, for another QSO.